The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good morning. Welcome to the Navigating Your Life Show, featuring host Dr. Nathaniel J. Williams. In the next hour, the goal of the show is to help you with the challenges facing you and potentially change your life forever. Now here's Dr. Nathaniel J. Williams.
Good morning. I'm so glad that you're able to join us today on the Navigating Your Life Show. Today we're going to be talking about the topic of dealing with anxiety. And we know that in the world that we live in, there is just so much that is going on around us and that could make us filled with some anxiety and fear. And we think it's important that we recognize that that exists, but also have some solutions to what can be done if it is something that you're dealing with on a daily basis. So we have with us today a guest who's going to lead us through this conversation, and her name is Paula Maruleski. And let me just give you a little bit of a background about Paula before we ask her to say good morning. Paula is a Christian author, a teacher, and a speaker whose works encompass Bible studies and Christian fiction and articles and devotionals and poetry. She's authored a book called Fire in My Mind, Personal Insights and Practical Help for Severe Anxiety. This book is written out of her own struggle with severe anxiety and her journey toward wholeness and healing. So we're going to spend some time talking with Paula today to gain some of her insights. So Paula, welcome to the Navigating Your Life Show.
Thank you so much, Dr. Williams. It is truly my pleasure to be here today.
Thank you. Well, Paula, I wanted to start out with something that I read in your book, and we're going to talk a little bit later about how people can get a copy of your book, and I think it's a powerful read, wanted to get people to become somewhat familiar with some of your thinking. And I wanted to, on your page 11 of your book, you have a page that's titled Fire in My Mind, Slowing Down Racing Thoughts. And Paula, would you mind if reading that for our listeners? Because I think it'll really frame out the conversation we want to have going forth.
I would be glad to do so. And just to give the listening audience a little insight, every chapter in my book starts with a page like this that gives you an insight into my mind and what it really looks like and feels like to live with severe anxiety. So this is the first page, Fire in My Mind. It is an endless cycle. When I wake, it is as if I never slept. My thoughts pick up on the very sentence where I fell asleep the night before, as if there was no break, not even an ellipsis to denote a time of unconscious oblivion. Fatigue overshadows me so that, for a few moments, my thoughts are sluggish, dully staring at my fears, feeling the weight of my worries. And then, as I recognize that these same enemies are still here with me, my heart begins to pound. Adrenaline rushes through me, and I curl up with a moan on my bed, unwilling to face the day, unable to cope with yet more hours of the ceaseless spinning of my thoughts. My thoughts scream into a whirlwind, mounting with force as I go over and over and over and over the same ground again and again and again. My mind picks up such speed that it aches and hurts with the effort. Then comes the fire. The speed and intensity of my thoughts, My anxieties burst into flame inside me. My very brain feels as if it is physically burning. My vision darkens, contracts, and the world closes in around me as my veins catch the fire, rippling through my body, forcing my heart to race, my breath to come fast and shallow, my skin to burn with an internal heat I cannot control. It is consuming and agonizing. A hell within my own mind, complete with fire and brimstone and sulfur. And still, I cannot control the thoughts that race with flame through my mind, burning with a fury that cannot be contained, cannot be quenched, cannot be satisfied.
Wow. Paula, thank you so much for sharing that. Share with our listeners, why did you write Fire in My Mind? And from listening to you share and recite that page of your book, I think there, you know, we can infer some things, but I'd like to hear from you as to why did you write the book?
There were a couple of reasons. The first was that when I came down with a severe anxiety disorder about 5 years ago, and it took me 3 years to realize what the problem was. And so I suffered with this exactly what I just read to you was what my thought processes were like day after day, month after month, year after year, and I had no idea what was going on. All I knew was previously I'd been really in control of my life, and suddenly I thought I was going crazy. And it wasn't until I did some research that I found out about severe anxiety, and I thought, oh my word, this is me. And so one of my goals through Fire in My Mind, especially by giving you this glimpse inside my own thought processes, is to help people recognize it in themselves or recognize it in friends or family members whom they love. Because until you recognize what the problem is, there's no way that you can get help. And so one of the major purposes of Fire in My Mind is to help you understand and recognize severe anxiety in yourself or in another.
Wow.
Another reason that I wrote it is to really help people who are supporting people with severe anxiety to understand what it's like. Because it's so easy. If you do not have a severe anxiety problem, and remember, this is going beyond the, oh, yeah, sure, everybody has worries in life. This is severe anxiety that is truly interfering with your life processes. It's very easy from the outside to say, hey, just relax. Hang loose. It's all going to be okay. Things aren't as bad as they look. And people don't understand the complete, you know, cosmic upheaval that's going on inside someone's mind and heart and spirit and body, the whole thing. And so it's to really help promote an understanding so that people won't give these pat answers or off-the-cuff remarks that are so damaging and instead can learn how to give real support. And that, of course, is the third reason I wrote it, is to really give practical tools to help people address their anxiety. This is only, you know, Fire in My Mind is only one part of what might be their healing process, but I'm hoping that it can be that part, to provide practical insights, practical tools, things that really work, a foundation in Scripture that people can stand on if they have the Christian faith, and in order to really start making a change to get out of this deadly cycle. Because the good news is, you can get out.
Paula, let me interrupt you and just ask you, how do you know it's just not the ordinary, you know, life is full of worries, as you said, as opposed to you have a real problem? And I picked up some of that from reading your book where you talked about, or is this the segment you just read earlier about, you know, not wanting to get out of bed, unwillingness to face the day, the thoughts spinning around in your mind, the aches and the hurts with the effort. So I think that those may be clues that you have a larger problem. But if you can share with our listeners, how do you know that there's a difference between just life is complex at times, if not all the time, and or I have a real problem?
There are a couple things to be aware of, and the first is something that's really important that you just said. Everybody does have anxiety and stress. That's the nature of life. But when your anxiety level is interfering with your life, when there are bodily signs that there are problems, for instance, your blood pressure is going up, you're having panic attacks. That often is where people suddenly realize that they've got an anxiety problem, so their heart is racing, and they end up in the emergency room thinking they have a heart attack,
And
the doctor can't find anything wrong. Mm-hmm. That's a big clue. If you find that you are obsessing about things, that you can't let go of your thoughts, if you find that if you really objectively are looking at your life and going, there's nothing really wrong here, but I'm anxious all the time, which was, in fact, where I was coming from. My anxiety disorder sparked because I had started a business, and as everyone who owns their own business knows, having your own business is a high stress, and it's a constant, unremitting level of stress. Even if nothing's really going wrong, you still have a lot of responsibility on your plate. And so I would find that I was simply anxious and obsessing about things all the time, even when there was technically nothing wrong, and I was unable to relax. Even on the weekends or even on vacation, I couldn't let go, and I'd be looking, and everything was always a worst-case scenario, and what if, what if, what if, what if, what if. So in the spectrum of things, certainly, if you find yourself in the emergency room and the doctor says you're not having a heart attack, I think you're just stressed, or way back to the other end where you just say, you know, I can never relax. I can never relax, and I'm always thinking about problems, and I'm always worried about things. Anywhere along that spectrum, I think that you should seek for counsel to determine if there's something that you can change in your lifestyle, in your patterns of behavior, in your patterns of thought, that can help you deal with life more effectively. Because you shouldn't be stressed all the time. To having an impact on your life, it's time to seek help.
Paul, we're getting ready to take a break, but before we do that, could you answer, why did you format the book the way you did? And if you can just briefly describe for our listeners how you've done that.
Certainly. The format of Fire in My Mind, I really wanted to make it easy for people to read in short chunks, because when you have anxiety, the thought of reading a long book and, you know, lengthy paragraphs and chapters upon chapter is really daunting. And so I broke each chapter, there are 8 chapters, into 4 sections. The first is a simple one-page Inside My Mind section. That's what it's called, which is just like what I read previously. This is a one-page glimpse, personal narration of what I experienced to help people to understand that they're not alone and that to understand what it's like to live in this place. The second section of each chapter is called Practical Matters, and this is broken into pure, simple, practical advice both for the person suffering from anxiety and for the support group. So I address both parts.
We're going to hold there, and you can describe the other. You said there were 4 sections in each chapter? Okay. If you can describe the others, too, after we get back from this break.
Thank you.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Hyperbike Performance Centers, the extreme motorcycle tuning facility for performance-minded riders. For the most advanced tuning possible, bring your bike in for a diagnostic in their climate-controlled dyno room. Take advantage of their suspension services designed to tweak your bike's suspension till it fits your personal riding needs. All of their performance products are tested in their facility first. Brakes, wheels, alarms, GPS, and more. Hyperbike Performance Centers on Route 40 West, Frederick, or visit hyperbikeperformancecenters.com.
Wielding power, shaping environments and outcomes, and making things happen are all essential characteristics of great leaders. Yet these qualities alone are not enough to ensure your success. In a complex world, how do you decide what's most important to you? In your career, your relationships, your finances, your family, in the world around you, in the whole of your life at large? Dr. Joseph Riggio, the host of Leadership Intuition, says that personal leadership, the desire to take charge of your life, is the key to creating futures that work and building a life worth living. Join Joseph as he reveals the power of uncovering and living your own personal mythology, the key to personal transformation, exquisite performance, and social influence. Learn to look inside and discover your personal mythology and unique leadership style. Go beyond conventional advice and discover your unique success blueprint on Leadership Intuitions with Dr. Joseph Riggio each Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on the Voice America channel. Leadership Intuitions, power, achievement, relationships.
Hey, Dad.
What?
I can't get the ketchup bottle open.
Here, let me try. Here you go.
Thanks.
You don't have to be a hero to be a hero. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com. Tuned in to the Navigating Your Life Show with Dr. Nathaniel J. Williams. To participate in our discussion, please call 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to host@navigatingyourlifeshow.net. Now, back to the program.
Well, welcome back, and we're with Paula Marleski, and she is the author of Fire in My Mind, and she was describing how her book is laid out, and if you can pick up where you left off, Paula, I would appreciate that.
Certainly. The third section of Fire in My Mind is, of each chapter, is composed of a section called Truth from the Word, and it's five short scriptural meditations on the topic of the chapter with some very practical questions and application at the end of each devotion. And then finally, each chapter ends with a section called Prayer from the Heart, where I give people a written prayer that they can pray to help them through, because sometimes it's hard to find the words when you're that deeply within the throes of anxiety.
Wow. One of the other things that your book talks about is you have a chapter on irrationality in your book. Are you saying that people who are otherwise very rational, logical, and orderly can be plagued with irrational thoughts?
Absolutely. Part of the thing to understand is that thoughts come into our head all the time from a lot of different sources, and if you're not, you know, suffering with severe anxiety, you might have a nutty kind of thought, and you just shrug it off, and you go, gee, that was really dumb. But someone with severe anxiety tends to grab onto that thought and then obsess about it and almost freak out about it. And so it becomes this nasty, obsessive-compulsive cycle right within the brain.
Let's move on to begin to talk a little bit about the feelings that that comes from this, from dealing with anxiety. You talk in one of your chapters about the clutch of fear. How do fear and anxiety interact as you see it?
Well, what happens is when you are in the grip of anxiety, one of the biggest problems with it is that you feel out of control. And what happens when you feel out of control? You become afraid. So that you become afraid that I'm losing my mind. I won't be able to do what I need to do. People are looking down at me. And it goes on and on and on. And because you're now afraid, you try even more to get back in control of the situation. But if you don't know what's going on inside you, if you don't understand what caused the anxiety in the first place, I hate to say it, but you're kind of doomed to failure, and so you become more anxious because you can't control it.
Let's just stick with that for a second, Paula. Mm-hmm. When you say what caused the anxiety, as you looked at your own situation, what would you say caused your anxiety?
That is an excellent question, and it's really at the core of a lot of the book. It's the importance of understanding that anxiety is caused by a variety of different factors and affects every area of your life. So it's not so simple that you can say, oh, it's a matter of your willpower, just, you know, relax. So in my case, what happened was there had been what you call an activating event way back when I was in my early 20s. It kind of set me up for this trouble. So every time I was under severe stress, I would have little blips of severe anxiety, but they'd go away. But then when I started my business, I had 24/7 stress. And so this constant flooding of my body with adrenaline, there's the physical side of things, ended up creating this adrenaline and cortisol reaction that literally blocks the receptors in your brain toward feeling good. Okay, so there's a physical aspect of anxiety, and that's why it's so important to understand that when you're under stress all the time and don't give your body a chance to heal, your body itself is going to have a physiological response and cause anxiety. Then you have all the mental side of things that causes anxiety. For myself, I'm a perfectionist. So here I am, I'm under stress all the time because of my work, and I want to do everything perfectly. So here I'm adding more stress to myself.
But Paula, when you looked at why did you want to do everything perfectly, where did you find that had its origin from?
Well, oddly enough, it wasn't what I was taught, because my parents, who are magnificent people, always taught me, and if I have to give good advice, here's a piece of it. They always taught me that you don't have to be the best, but you must do your best. But somehow I forgot that advice going along the way, and I thought, no, I have to be the best. And maybe it's because I had a lot of capabilities, honor student, and always basically accomplished what I set out my mind to do. I wasn't used to failure, and I didn't accept failure from myself. And so a lot of my healing process has been to understand that I don't have to be perfect,
and things don't
have to go perfectly.
And I guess in starting your business, that was a good example of, if I failed at this, and you don't do failure very well, I would see that would be a natural breeding ground for anxiety. Is that
it's huge?
It's playing too, something that's a challenge for your
exactly.
Yourself.
As I said, the whole person becomes involved. So you have the adrenaline running through your system. There's the physical. You have the belief systems that are hampering you. You know, like I'm a perfectionist. Well, then of course, because you feel out of control at this point, you're already feeling out of control. Your emotions get involved. So I'm afraid all the time. And then you start doubting yourself because nothing's going right, so I'm doubting my core belief system of who I am and who I think God is, so then the spirit gets involved. And so by the time, if you let these things go, it becomes this Gordian knot that gets harder and harder to untangle.
There's a book I wrote a while back called Navigating Your Life, and I propose that there are eight domains in your life, and that, you know, one is your finances, another is your education and personal development, spirituality, recreation, your environment, your family and friends. And as I listen to you talk, you're saying that this anxiety, this fear, starts showing up in all of those different areas of your life as well. You see it in your health. You see it in your desire to pursue education and to refine yourself. You see it in, I think, your finances. So
oh, absolutely.
It shows up.
It begins spreading its tendrils everywhere. It starts affecting your relationships.
Sure.
You're terrified when you start to pay the bills, and you study your income levels. And if you're in business, your income is fluctuating, so you're worrying every time it dips a little bit. So this constant breeding ground for further anxiety, and that's, like I said, it just cycles. The anxiety breeds the fear breeds the anxiety.
Right. And I would also think that even if your income goes up, is also part of you that is has anxiety about that as well, and probably questioning, you know, what is that about, and can I maintain that? And
oh, sure. As soon as it goes up, I've got to keep it there.
Yeah. No good deed goes unpunished.
Precisely.
Wow.
So after a certain point, when you have a problem with severe anxiety, it doesn't matter what's going right in your life. You can't see it. You can't appreciate it. Gratitude goes right out the window because you're terrified all the time.
Sure.
You know, it's very negative view of the world. It's always, well, I better grasp hold of this really quickly because it might get taken away from me. And that's never been a good place to enjoy life or relax or be happy or be thankful.
And you made the correlation between fear and anxiety, but you also make a correlation between anger and anxiety. Could you explain that to our listeners?
Oh, that one's a rough one. I have to admit, that was probably the toughest chapter that I wrote, was the chapter on anger, because many times we're taught that anger isn't good. You shouldn't be angry, right? Anger is a very natural emotion, and you're going to feel it. And when you have severe anxiety, and you've had it for a while, and it's very normal and natural to be angry out of everything that is going wrong, about the fact that anxiety has stolen the joy out of your life. It may have stolen opportunities that you were afraid to take hold of. It may have had its effect on relationships and put a strain on your family and on your friends. You know, and what I found was that I would have rage, predominantly against myself, you know, anger that I couldn't beat this. I couldn't get through this. I couldn't pull myself up by my bootstraps, which is what my perfectionism was demanding that I do. And then, of course, I was angry at God, because why would he allow this, and why wasn't he answering my prayers for help, and why wasn't I getting healed? And it was, you know, this absolute fury that was just lashing out in all directions. And that was the key then to realize, was that the anger was natural and normal, and I shouldn't feel guilty about it, but that I had to start channeling it into appropriate and positive ways. Beating your pillow, quite frankly, might feel good real short term, but it doesn't do any good. Screaming at the top of your lungs is just going to hurt your throat. Shaking your fist at God isn't going to do any good either, just by the way. But instead, to realize that the anger could now be a source of energy for me, because anxiety breeds apathy, and anger is like an energy juice shot into your arm. So now I could have the energy that I needed to actually start making change in my life that could result in positive effects and remove the anxiety. And that's what you should be using anger for. You say, yes, I'm angry, I'm furious, I'm enraged because I have this problem. What am I going to do about it? Let's use the anger as energy toward that end, rather than toward shaking my fist at the sky.
And before we get ready to take another break, let's say you see the anxiety and anger and fear. I think you've given us some ideas of when we see it in ourselves. Well, let's say we see it in someone else that we care about.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one of the things that you would probably agree is not helpful is to walk up to a person and say, snap out of it.
Worst thing you can ever do. Totally. Please don't do that. Erase it from your vocabulary.
So what can you say as we have about a minute before we need to take a break?
Number one, educate yourself about severe anxiety. Figure out if this is what it looks like. And number two, encourage them to get counsel. It is almost impossible for people to beat this on their own. It is vital to get professional help, just like you would go to a doctor if you had cancer. It's time to go to a counselor, psychologist, psychiatrist, cognitive behavioral specialist, someone who has professional skill at helping you out of this. And that's what I would encourage people to encourage their friends and family members.
And what have you seen as some of the reasons why people don't go for that kind of help?
Shame. We have such a stigma attached to, oh, you go to a psychologist? You mean there's something wrong with you? Yeah, I got a problem in my head. And so there's this huge stigma attached to it, because we have this idea that if it's in our heads, we should be able to control it. And that's because we don't really understand all that anxiety is really about and what's involved in it. And if we understood better that it's a relationship between the mind, the body, the brain, the spirit, everything is intertwined, then I think we would really understand better the value of people who are skilled at unraveling all these interconnections and helping to solve them piece by piece and bit by bit to help the person out of the hole they're in.
As we get ready to take another break, I think that that's such powerful information for people to consider. So we'll come back and finish our conversation with Paula.
Streaming live, the Internet Talk Radio. VoiceAmerica.com.
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle me.
It's pretty scary around here, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get me.
I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
Go to jail for a gun crime and your family serves a sentence with you. Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Hyperbike Performance Centers, the extreme motorcycle tuning facility for performance-minded riders. For the most advanced tuning possible, bring your bike in for a diagnostic in their climate-controlled dyno room. Take advantage of their suspension services designed to tweak your bike's suspension till it fits your personal riding needs. All of their performance products are tested in their facility first. Brakes, wheels, alarms, GPS, and more. Hyperbike Performance Centers on Route 40 West, Frederick, or visit hyperbikeperformancecenters.com.
Is there truly a lesson in every situation? Can you learn from another person's experiences, or are lessons learned when they only happen to you? Dave Felzer, number one national and number one international best-selling author, challenges listeners to stand tall, to be accountable no matter what the setbacks, and to recommit to enhancing their lives as well as assisting others around them. Listen to The Dave Felzer Show every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Radio Network.
Hello?
Hi, Bill? This is George Dewey from up the street.
Oh, hey, George. How you doing?
Good, good. Say, I noticed you've been walking to work these days instead of driving, and I don't quite know how to say this, but...
But what?
But your butt. Your buttocks. Your butt. I think I found your butt on my front lawn. Have you recently lost it?
As a matter of fact, I have, George. It's about time someone noticed.
Well, it was kind of hard to miss, if you know what I mean. Anyways, would you like it back?
Would I like it back? No, not really.
So it's okay if I throw it out?
Sure, that's fine. Take it easy, George.
Small step number 8. Walk instead of driving whenever you can. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com. Tuned in to the Navigating Your Life Show with Dr. Nathaniel J. Williams. To participate in our discussion, please call 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to host@navigatingyourlifeshow.net. Now, back to the program.
Well, welcome back. We are speaking with Paula Maruleski, and she is the author of Fire in My Mind, which is a book that is talking about the issue of anxiety, and it's titled, its subtitle is Personal Insights and Practical Help for Severe Anxiety. Several times in our conversation, Paula, you have interjected things about God and Christian beliefs and some of the challenges that people have with anxiety as they look at their spirituality. Would you mind talking a little bit about that?
Certainly. One of the things that I think is the most important. Whoa! The most important when you're looking.
I guess that was the devil there.
Please continue. When looking at the Christian faith with regard to severe anxiety, is that within the Christian church there is this unspoken and sometimes spoken assumption that Christians depression or anxiety or mental or emotional issues. No, no, no. If you just pray, everything will be all right. Well, you know, God works in a lot of ways, and he works through counselors and psychologists and books and the internet and knowledge and learning. Thank you very much. And it's important to understand that the Christian faith has nothing to do with whether or not people get emotional or mental illnesses, just as people who are Christians get physical illnesses. And if we in the Christian church are going to start helping people, it's time to start removing this stigma and this, oh, horror, is there something wrong with your mind? Kind of attitude that we have. And to, for people to really understand that it's okay. It's okay that you have a severe anxiety disorder. Anxiety is not a sin. Okay? That's going to be a real shocker to some people, and it's going to be really freeing to a lot of others. Well, anxiety is not a sin. Right. Anxiety is a warning sign that there is something wrong.
Paula, just hold on a minute. We have a caller, Brenda from Ohio, and I'd like to hear her thoughts or comments. Brenda, you're on the line?
Yes.
Good. Please share your thoughts.
Okay. A little, before the break, you had shared that person needs to address the issues and, like you said, not to just tell someone to, like, snap out of it. Supposing you're on anti-anxiety medication and it's working and the symptoms are very minor, but you're not addressing the issues. What are the odds that you'll ever be off the medication?
That's a really good question and brings up a really fantastic point. If you're not addressing the source, then the symptoms are never really going to go away. So if you're addressing the symptoms through medication only, exclusively, mm-hmm. and you're not addressing the source problems of the anxiety, then the chances of you going off the medication are pretty slim unless the source is purely circumstance. You know, you have a really bad financial trouble, and as soon as you get a job, then you feel better, well, then you'd be able to go off the medication. With anti-anxiety medication, it's essential to recognize that it may be necessary for people to break the cycle of anxiety, and it may be necessary that they're on it permanently if there's any kind of chemical imbalance in the brain. But that anxiety medication should always be used in conjunction with counseling that is helping you address the root source of the problems so that you can achieve the best level of health and well-being that you possibly can.
So,
the
Paula,
two should work together.
Brenda, you still on the line?
Yes.
Okay. Brenda, have you been told that, has it been associated that this is a medication that you would be taking for the rest of your life, and so is that a reason why you would be concerned?
No, actually, I wasn't told that, but I also wasn't told to get any type of therapy or discuss the problem.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
That unfortunately is all too common. Mm-hmm. We're in a culture that tends to pop pills very easily. And, you know, just let me state very clearly that I have been on anti-anxiety medication. I still take it periodically. It's an important part of my recovery process and still of the ongoing process. But it's imperative to then treat the underlying behaviors or belief systems that are contributing to the anxiety. You know, if it's purely a physiological problem, then medication is all you need. But usually, we have some thought processes that are contributing. For instance, I must be perfect. If I'm not perfect, nobody's going to like me. For instance, everybody must approve of what I do all the time. Those are thought processes that make us anxious on a day-to-day basis, or perhaps behaviors like, all right, I'm going to hit people where it hurts, multitasking. Contributes to anxiety, or perhaps not getting enough sleep, or trying to push yourself to work at 100% capacity day after day after day without any ebb and flow. Those are behaviors that need addressing.
Right. So sometimes it's the lies we tell ourselves and then begin to believe that are part of the problems as well.
Huge.
Thank you, Brenda, for calling in.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Good.
Thank you.
Thanks. A feature of our show going forth is that we are going to be asking an esteemed colleague of mine, Dr. Craig Paizo, who is a licensed psychologist of about 30 years in the state of Pennsylvania, to join in as we have different conversations about navigating life. So, Craig, are you on the line? Yes, sir. Wonderful. Craig, we have Paula Moraleski, who has written a wonderful book called Fire in My Mind about anxiety and dealing with that. And Craig, just as you join in the conversation with Paula and I and our listeners, what are some of the thoughts that that come to your mind about the issue of anxiety and ways in which to cope with it and to hopefully overcome it?
Well, I've been listening to the recent conversation and would agree wholeheartedly with what I've heard, that so much of anxiety is, if not produced by the way we think, it's certainly made worse by the way we think. So to change our programs, if you will, if we change the software that's operating on our hard drive above the neck, we can do so much to improve our mood state, because it is produced and or made worse by the thoughts we have.
Absolutely. If I can just follow up on that, as I have been in counseling, my counselor always reminds me, you change the way you think first, and then you make that influences your actions, your behaviors, and the tail end of things is that your emotions finally get in line.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I'll share with you before we take another caller from San Diego is I'm in the process of writing another book, and one of the things that I incorporated in my last book that's also following up in this book is that there are four C's of change, and everything starts with a concept that is then supported by our communications, that's then supported by our collaborations, and then we yield the consequences. And if we understand that those four things are connected and you're not going to get one without the other, we save ourselves a lot of trouble. So we want to get Kent in here before we have to take another break. So Kent, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Sure. Please share your
thoughts. I want to make a quick comment on what I just heard before, then I'll pose my question. I know
sure.
that I heard J.P. Moreland speak once, so they did a study out of UCLA recently that they looked at people's thinking, and they actually have shown that their brain chemistry can actually change from thinking patterns, that you don't necessarily have to take medication to do that. So that's kind of an intriguing thought there. But my question was to you, Paula. You had mentioned about Christian anxiety that's kind of taboo. I know for me, you know, one of my favorite promises was where Jesus said, be anxious for nothing, and don't worry about your needs. Your Father knows that you need to be taken care of. And I kind of look at it this way, that it's a promise to take hold of, and when I experience anxiety, I know I'm not taking hold of it. So I don't necessarily see it as sin. I just see it as not taking hold of something wonderful that God has offered me, whether that be through my thinking patterns, I definitely know that's there, or other reasons. I just go, okay, where am I missing the mark to achieve this wonderful state of emotional being? What are your thoughts about that?
I think that is very well said, because it's very common within the Christian church where people say, oh, anxiety is a sin. You're being disobedient if you're anxious, and that's a bunch of baloney. As you said, we can make a choice about whether or not to worry about something. Worry is an act of the will. Anxiety is not necessarily an act of the will. Anxiety is a warning sign that something's wrong. So just as you said, if you're feeling anxious, you're saying, all right, something's out of kilter here. Maybe it's how I'm approaching life. Maybe I need to change my circumstances. Maybe I need to change my behavior. But at any rate, something's out of kilter. That's why I'm feeling anxious. I need to make a change so that, as you say, I can better my life and also get myself in line with realizing where God is active in my life.
Mm-hmm. Kent, thank you so much for calling in. We're going to get ready to go out to break, and when we come back, we're going to wrap up with Paula and then have a chance to talk a little bit further with Dr. Paizo. So we will get to that on the other side of this commercial.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time, the number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
And we're back. Bob from Scranton, you're on the air.
Hi, Ted. Love the show. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, Bob. Is there a special someone out there you'd like to talk about?
There is, Ted. I recently lost a very big part of my life.
You'd been together a long time?
Since college. This is for my belly, my paunch, my spare tire. I know we had some good times. God knows I'll never forget that night in Albuquerque with the burritos.
It's never easy to lose something that's been such a huge part of you, Bob. Where'd the magic go?
Well, I'd recently begun taking the stairs more and more instead of the elevator, and then we started seeing less and less of each other. One day, it was just gone.
Small step number 67. Take the stairs instead of the elevator or escalator. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hyperbike Performance Centers, the extreme motorcycle tuning facility for performance-minded riders. For the most advanced tuning possible, bring your bike in for a diagnostic in their climate-controlled dyno room. Take advantage of their suspension services designed to tweak your bike's suspension till it fits your personal riding needs. All of their performance products are tested in their facility first. Brakes, wheels, alarms, GPS, and more. Hyperbike Performance Centers on Route 40 West, Frederick, or visit hyperbikeperformancecenters.com.
Are you living with passion, purpose, and play? Are you ready to overcome your fears, claim your power and purpose to make your mark on the world, but don't know where to start? TuckSelf, the Rebel Bell, will inspire and empower you to squeeze as much juice and joy out of life as possible. You'll find your passion, live on purpose, and do it all with a boatload of play. Join this amazing voice for Tuck Talk every Monday at 6 p.m. in the East and 3 p.m. in the West on the Voice America Variety Channel. Live rebelliciously and on your terms. The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com. Tuned in to the Navigating Your Life Show with Dr. Nathaniel J. Williams. To participate in our discussion, please call 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to host@navigatingyourlifeshow.net. Now, back to the program.
Well, welcome back. In Paula's book, Paula Marleski is the author of Fire in My Mind, and we've been talking with her for the last 40 minutes or so, and we're getting ready to wrap up with her, and we're in the end of her book. She writes a statement that says, so reach out. You have been given great gifts by God during the course of your struggle with anxiety. Don't hold on to these, don't hold these, those gifts to yourself. Pass them on. And so, Paula, my question for you as we get ready to wrap up is, why did you choose to end the book on that point?
There were a few reasons, and the first has to do with the social stigma that we've already referred to in the course of this show. People are ashamed to admit that they have anxiety, and because they're ashamed to admit it, they don't talk about it. And as a result, people like me suffer for years and never know what's wrong. So we need to start talking about it and bringing it into the light so that people can see it in themselves and get the help that they need. And the second thing is, in all of life, you will never experience greater power and healing and wisdom than that which is drawn from your own experience. Like, I could come here today and say, I've read 5 books on severe anxiety, and that would be cool, but it's not going to touch your heart. What's going to touch your heart is knowing that I've been there. I've been in the pit. I know what it feels like. I know the pain, and I know that you can get out because I've gotten out.
Wow. Paula, we thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. It is truly inspiring, and I want to direct our listeners to reaching out to you. You can do so at her website, which is www.sinkyourroots.com. You can email her at info@sinkyourroots.com, and her address is P.O. Box 276, Swenksville, S-C-H-W-E-N-K-S-V-I-L-L-E, Pennsylvania, 19473. So again, Paula, thank you so much. Your message has been extremely powerful.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Sure. Craig, yes. As you have been listening to the show, what are some thoughts that come to your mind that you would like to share with your with our listeners?
Yeah, just to piggyback on what Paula was saying, you know, I'd like listeners to think about the definition of courage. Because, you know, sometimes we put this pressure on ourselves to act as if to be courageous or brave means we do not have fear or anxiety. And I really want to encourage people to think otherwise. That is, the best definition of courage I ever heard was to take continued appropriate action in the face of fear or anxiety. So what that does is give us permission to go forward and take action and not be held back. Because if we believe that to have anxiety is to make us a coward, or to be fearful is to make us a would-be failure, and to not act is the worst handicap, if you will. Whereas if you believe that to be courageous means, while I'm fearful or anxious, I'm still marching forward, I'm doing what I need to do. The parallel would be to say, rather than to have your pain completely under control, you're going to live your life and manage it amidst pain, as opposed to being 100% pain-free. So to live with anxiety and still take action is the definition of courage.
And do you feel that in our society that that's something that is not thought very highly of, or it has a prominent place as we, you know, is courage? I mean, I think a lot of times courage requires you to be somewhat of an independent soul and maybe going where others are not ready to go and hoping that they catch up with you. So what is the reason, you know, we understand that courage is necessary, but why wouldn't courage be present?
Well, you know, there's part of our society that is very judgmental and critical and applies the stigma Paula was talking about for any perceived weakness. And in reality, it's a perceived part of humanity. To be nervous, fearful, even highly anxious at some point in life is a normal part of a human experience. But there is a disdain societally for any perceived weakness. And I would just encourage listeners to reframe that as, you know, part of the normal course of life. To be anxious, to be fearful at times, it's actually necessary and appropriate that we have fear so as not to cross the line or put ourselves in danger. And to be highly anxious at times, while it could be and is disabling, is not a source of stigma. And to really enjoy the idea that while it is a very unpleasant experience to be to have a panic attack, for example, but to recognize otherwise that is such a common part of the human experience, especially when we have dire circumstances we face.
Wow. And Craig, this disdain for being less than and failing and being, you know, having challenges, as we get ready to wrap up in the next 3 minutes or so, why do you think that is? Why do we struggle with people, places, and things that we perceive to be less than?
I believe it's a very basic part of human psyche to become or want to be fairly grandiose. Grandiose means to have an exaggerated sense of power and control or importance.
But why, Craig?
Well, that's a normal part of human development when we're 2, 3, 4 years old. And it's not reality, of course, but it keeps us from feeling overly fearful or inept or not important.
So it's
to be inflated.
So it's somewhat of a security blanket.
It's a security blanket. And yet, as you and I have spoken before, a sense of humility, which is the real source of our power, and ironically, a way to better manage fear and anxiety, is coming to grips with the fact that we are not Superman and Superwoman, nor do we have to be.
But a lot of times the cartoons and other things we're watching in our developmental stages talks about those are the only people that live and survive and do well. And then we turn to the Discovery Channel and we're seeing animals being eaten by other animals that appear to be bigger and stronger. So this is just perpetuated over and over for us that being strong is the way to be.
Yeah, it really is a popular notion, but from a psychological and emotional standpoint,
it's very dangerous.
It's very dangerous because we all know that the strongest, most secure people in this world are not grandiose. They are reality-based and very grounded, very attuned to the truth about their strengths as well as their weaknesses.
And so when you think about that, Craig, when you think about people such as Mother Teresa, you think about Nelson Mandela, you think about the Dalai Lama. Those are not people out there pounding, you know, the lectern. They're speaking from a quiet sense of a of authority and with a sense of passion, that all the others that are yelling and screaming have a fraction of what they're able to attain.
Yes, those still waters run very deeply, if you will, and they are some of the most powerful people in the history of the planet.
Wow. Wow, this has been really insightful. I think Paula has really opened up with her book, and for those of you that would like a copy, please visit her website, www.sinkyourroots.com, and I'm sure there's a link there of how to get a copy of it. But I think she talks about something that's really important, and I also think just looking at our society and why we live the way we do and what's the mileage we get out of it and how we can begin to change it. I got an email from a friend while the show was going on who was listening and saying that this is describing my life every day. And I think that we have to help our listeners understand that you didn't know what you didn't know, but now that you do know, you can hopefully live a different existence than you have previously. That's our challenge, is to gain from the insights that are being prepared. Your thoughts, Greg, as we have 30 seconds.
Yeah, absolutely. Information is power if it's good, truthful, accurate information.
Right.
The other side of it is deception is disempowering.
Thank you, everybody, for listening, and look forward to having you join us next week. This is your host, Dr. Nathaniel J. Williams.
Thank you again for listening to the Navigating Your Life show. Please join Dr. Nathaniel J. Williams again next Monday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Have a great week, and here's hoping your life will change for the better forever.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.